Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sisterhood Club podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard.
And me, Pam Caldwell.
Today we are bringing you a really exciting, inspiring podcast interview with the incredible Elise Su, who is currently Chief of the Metaverse at KPMG and doing some phenomenal things in her career, in her life. Well, I mean, Pam, what was that conversation just like for the last 45 minutes?
Do you know what? It was absolutely fabulous. And she comes across as such an intelligent, intelligent woman who has absolutely driven a career just by being curious, right? And I think the interesting thing that first sort of got her entry into being curious about technology, it was from a very interesting angle, but she's very futuristic. And if you want to be excited about what emerging technologies can do for good in the future and have real life impact, I think it will ultimately get people's brains firing in different directions around how they could actually be involved with shaping the future of technologies as to bring real life value and have impact.
100%. And I think the biggest takeaway for me is just how important it is for women to be curious about technology, to not only have a seat at the table, have a voice at the table, because technology can enable so many incredible things. And with the right people driving the bus, we are really going to achieve and shape the future that we want to create. And you can be a consumer or you can be a creator. And I really hope that this inspires you to be a creator in this new world. So enjoy today's episode. Please share it. Please press that subscribe button. We love doing these episodes, but we need your support to get this podcast out there. So if you could do that for us, that would be amazing. And enjoy today. Hello and welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we empower women with all the tools they need to succeed across life, business and career. We'll bring inspiring stories and practical advice from CEOs, founders and women who are achieving incredible things. So join us and let's shape our futures together. Elise Su, thank you so much for being on the Sisterhood Club podcast today. Absolutely amazing to have you here today. For those of our audience who don't know who you are, could you start by giving a little bit of introduction into who you are, your experience, your background, and we'll go from there. Over to you.
Thank you so much for having me on the pod. I'm so excited to speak to you both today. So a little intro about me. So I have two roles at the moment. I am Director of Metaverse at KPMG, and I'm also the co-founder of Transhuman Coin. So at KPMG, my role is to build new business models based on Metaverse technologies, including blockchain, XR, and all the other things around Web3, such as NFTs, crypto, and even DAOs. So interested in all different layers of the metaverse. And so my role is basically being a futurist and also an entrepreneur all in one. And on the other side, for Transhuman Coin, I am there to drive the community and also around our strategy. So Transhuman Coin is a DeFi project where we use that as a mechanism to fund science and technology projects that help us overcome limitations of human biology. So things like exoskeletons, even gene editing, and even funding the Tesla wheelchairs as a few examples.
Wow, that is so powerful. There's actually quite a lot to touch upon there, but what I love is just what you've touched upon in terms of acknowledging how technology can have such a positive impact on humankind. And that is one of the things that we feel so passionate about in terms of technologies of the future and how they're going to evolve. It's all about who's going to have a seat at the table and who is going to be using the emergence of these technologies as a force for good and as a force for positive impact. So could you tell us a little bit more about that? Because I think there is such a curiosity in terms of like even like all the terminology and everything that goes around about it. It can be quite scary, but ultimately the thought that these technologies can actually be the Tesla for wheelchairs. Mm. Like, what are you sort of seeing in terms of how the emergence of new technologies are actually going to be used for a force for good? And certainly, you feel free to have a chat about some of the more specific projects that you think are going to make change in the world.
At the beginning of my journey, when I co-founded Transhumanism Australia, which is the community that we started about 8 years ago. So it really started as a meetup, and then we eventually grew it to about 20,000 people globally. And it was a meeting of minds where I wanted to create a community where I could meet other people who were also interested in things like artificial intelligence, blockchain, and just the ideas around open source and self-sovereignty. So all these technologies and trends are really about, is what transhumanism is about. So with transhumanism, there's three pillars to what we're trying to achieve: super longevity, super well-being, and super intelligence. And this is why all of these technologies that I just mentioned really fit into the transhumanist umbrella. And when I first co-founded this community and we started spreading the word about what we do, there was a bit of a backlash. So people were very against the idea that we could one day upload our minds into the cloud and use that as a way to extend our longevity, but also our intelligence. So even right now, we are transhumanists, every one of us, because we extend our intelligence by using our smartphones. We no longer store this information in our brains. So we don't hold all this useless data, or what we deem as useless, in our minds, but we usually regulate that to the internet, where we can easily just find additional data at our fingertips, or even use Google Drive, where we are storing that additional data that we do not want to retain. So on that, there wasn't a really great reception, but then eventually a lot of people came to the idea of transhumanism because, like I said, we already are transhumanists. We use our phones. We also have pacemakers. We have the cochlear implants. So this, in a way, is allowing us to achieve those things with transhumanism and doing the merging of machines and humans. So this is where we can think about how technology has had a great impact on humanity. So even taking the technologies such as cochlear implants, it's allowed people who didn't previously have the ability to hear to have that that capability. So how can we say that we shouldn't be working on these technologies which give people a greater quality of life? And this applies to many other things which are coming down the pipeline, including brain-computer interfaces. So Elon Musk has this company Neuralink, which makes these chips, these implants, which are very tiny. They're about the size of smaller than our fingernail, I believe. And coming off that are these little wires, which are thinner than our human hair. So compared to the past, devices or brain implants, they're actually quite non-invasive. So what he's attempting to do with this is he wants to restore the ability of people who, say, who have had brain damage via an accident, as an example, or, you know, others who are born with some limitation, to give them additional abilities. So to restore their memory, to restore their cognition, or perhaps they've been paralyzed in an accident. So in this way, we are using these technologies just as we have done in the past for the betterment of humanity and to create that positive impact that you mentioned.
Mm. I want to jump in here because this is a really, really important topic, and I'm really glad that we've gone here today, because I think part of the reasons and one of the barriers to entry for women coming into technology is that they just hear all these bad headlines. You know, like, for example, right, the Neuralink that you're talking about with Elon Musk. When I first heard about that, and I can't remember the way it was marketed or the way it was mentioned, I was instantly petrified of that, thinking, oh my God, imagine putting a chip in my brain. This is terrible. The technology is just evolving in not a good way. It's going to be like Terminator. And we see all of these images of, like, you know, where technology could go to if we're not careful. I think that kind of puts up these barriers and these scarcities, especially for women who are like, I don't want to even get involved in that. That's scary. Do we want to be living in this virtual world? What's wrong with our world now? And there's a lot of confusion. But I think what you're really saying is that technology is a force for good if in the right hands, which is why we need the right people having a voice, having a seat at the table. So I think what you're speaking about, Elise, is so important, because this excites me. Now sitting here, I go, wow, like, what impact could that have on people's lives? You know, people who, you know, are struggling, people who have got, you know, been in accidents and aren't able to communicate. That is incredible, the fact that we could utilize this type of technology in such a positive way. I'm curious to know where this excitement and where this curiosity from your point of view came from. Have you always been interested in technology? Did you always have an interest growing up, or has it been something that developed sort of later on in life? Like, where did that stem from?
Initially was from my interest in making money. So I wanted to invest, and I was looking at, well, what do I invest in to invest in the future? Why not do that? So let's look at the technologies that are driving the progress in the future. And this is where I came across the term transhumanism and all the technologies that fall under it. So I started looking into gene editing, brain computer interfaces, artificial intelligence, and most of these technologies came under the purview of the big tech companies. And this is when I started realizing that we could be left behind if we didn't take an active role and interest in being a part of developing these, and actively, like you're referring to being a part of the teams that are driving and creating these technologies. Because as you mentioned before, in the hands of the wrong people, it could turn out very bad. So my initial interest was actually driven by a monetary interest, but then eventually it became more about the journey of humanity and where we're heading if we don't take a more active role in it. And this is where I also realized that there's not a lot of diversity in tech, like you alluded to before, and certainly not enough women. And I believe that it is getting a lot better. We are seeing more women in technical roles. So, for example, for ChatGPT, you do have a female CEO and a CTO, I believe. And also for Lightning Labs. So Lightning Labs creates Lightning Network, which is the layer two network, payments network that's built on the blockchain network. And that's led by Elizabeth Stark. And these people don't nearly get enough attention. And it's really important that we support these projects, especially Lightning Labs, in open source technologies or projects as well. So if we take the example of generative AI, there's a few large players out there. There's not many that can pour enough resources to creating these large language models. So you've got OpenAI, you've got Google, and possibly DeepMind, and also Stable Diffusion. So Stable Diffusion is the only open source one at the moment. And we've all seen in the past few weeks, we've seen how much progress the closed models have made. But what if we locked out that and we aren't actually having an active say in the progress of these and how it's going to be used and how it affects our lives and, more importantly, our livelihoods?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really love that. And I think if we could just like go back to that sort of scarcity mindset and the fear around how technologies are progressing. And I think a lot of the chat around like AI and the evolution of technology is driving a lot of fear in the mainstream at the moment. And I think it's because of all the chat about how it's going to evolve jobs, it's coming for your jobs. How do you feel like the evolution of these technologies in World 3 becoming more mainstream, the world of Web 3 becoming more mainstream, blockchain technologies, like, in your opinion, how are these going to positively impact the world of work? And what sort of careers do you feel are going to become more in demand? And to add on to that, what courses and what type of technologies would you encourage women to start getting curious about in order to keep their skill sets really up to date as the world progresses?
I do want to address that fear. I think that fear is justified. So AI, for example, the developments and how far it's come has probably come a lot faster than we thought. We always hear about this in movies. We see these sci-fi movies and read books about it. I even read a book called Mana. So Mana was written in 2003 by Marshall Brain. It's free. It's very short, 100 pages. You can read it on the internet. And it talks about how AI has replaced the low-wage workers. And eventually it's going after everybody's jobs. So Mana, I believe, was called that because it was the replacing the managers, the middle managers, basically, who used to manage the low-wage workers, you know, flipping burgers. And that's exactly where it all started, in all those burger chain restaurants, and how people could put on a headset and it would just tell the worker exactly what to do. You know, flip the burger, wait for 3 minutes, flip it again. Go check the bins, the bathrooms, etc. Greet the customer and tell the worker exactly what to say, so that it no longer had autonomy. We were actually completely driven or controlled by the AI itself until we took the headset off at the end of our shift. It's not a great way to work. So I think that future is actually possible. This is a fictional future that was written out in these books, but it is a reality that we have to think about that is possible. But then on the flip side, like you said, there is also a very positive element. So with AI, it can free us from doing all the main mundane, dangerous activities that we don't want to do, and which AI is perfectly suited to. For example, lifting heavy machinery, digging things out of the ground. It's all very dangerous work, especially in the mining sector. And increasingly in mining, it is being automated and replaced by these automated machinery and equipment, and there's actually no one out in the mines, maybe just one or two people who have to maintain the equipment. So it is actually freeing us to do a lot more interesting work that we're interested in. However, does it mean that it's also creating additional jobs or opportunities for us fast enough, that is? So if we go back to what are the opportunities that Web3 and blockchain offers, I believe it is. So if I pair it with other technology or, you know, other theories, so Moore's law, the cost of compute power is decreasing every 18 months to 2 years. Then you've got the Web3 movement, which is about people demanding more privacy, ownership, and security. If you pair those two up together, and if we think like entrepreneurs, this means that we can actually, or we should think about building more products, which because technology is getting cheaper and more accessible, for example, the latest advanced AI, we can actually just use an API call via, you know, Azure, and we can access the latest at our fingertips. And we pair that with the demand from users where they want more privacy, ownership, security. We can think about how we can build products which cater to that demand and which cater to where society is going. So I think it provides us a lot of opportunities, if you're entrepreneurial, to think about how you fill that gap and how you can create more equality in the products that you use. A classic example is going to be around the privacy aspect and these tech companies using our data. Now, maybe a lot of us don't care about that. And I certainly, you know, I'm all for you know, I'm accessing really good products like Gmail, and I know that they're using my data. I care, but don't care at the same time. But can we use the technology and the increased accessibility we have to these technologies to build greater products that are built on these Web3 principles? For example, offering people the revenue share when people's data is being used to build products. As for the point about where women should be looking at upskilling so that they can prepare themselves to, say, enter a career in Web3, I believe that women naturally have really great skills already. So that will translate into new career paths if that's what you choose. But even things like, let's just say you are working in accounting. Accounting is required for Web3. So because a lot of this is regulated as well, if you're a public company, you have to do your financials. And also it will be driven by regulation where they want increased transparency into what, you know, what consumers are actually getting themselves into. Is it a safe, financially sound product and company that they're investing, you know, their resources or actual money into? And then let's take marketing, for example. Marketing, easily transferable. It's just a different product or a different sector that you have to learn about. So I believe we all have really transferable skills, regardless of, you know, age or gender. And if we're looking for practical courses to do, I really like some of the courses on, I believe it's called Rabbit Hole. Is that okay?
I've heard of that.
So you actually get rewarded. It's learn to earn. So you are actually participating or using a Web3 product as well as learning about Web3.
I love that. And you said something really important there about, you know, the whole transferable skills piece, because this is something that Pam and I preach over and over again. It's like, if you're making a career pivot into technology, you do not need to take a salary cut. In fact, you could be potentially on more money doing the very same job, but for a tech company, because tech companies generally do pay higher salaries, as Pam and I have seen from over a decade now of recruiting. So this is why we are passionate about really starting to encourage women to explore opportunities, be curious. And, you know, I've got amazing friends and they're in business development and sales, and a couple of them are working for beauty companies. And I said, have you ever considered a career doing that in technology? And like, not really. And I was like, well, you should, because the commission is absolutely incredible and the money is fantastic. And they're like, oh, okay, I hadn't really thought about that. And then they looked into it and they've gone, actually, this is a really interesting product. I might be actually interested in applying for this. So I was like, you absolutely should. So I think these are the conversations that is really important to have. It's just like, not just being like, no, that's a techie company, that's for men only. And we always say it and we always laugh as like, women do have this like thought process of like, you know, boy in hoodie in a dungeon coding. And that's why this is to a club. Like, we want to get women like yourself on the podcast, because people can see, Elise Su, she's an intelligent, ambitious, incredible woman, right? She's not in a hoodie in a basement coding. She is out there putting herself out there, using her voice and really driving change in the world, which is just such a powerful message, you know, to showcase women. But Elise, I'd like to take it into your current present role with KPMG, because I just find the title of that role so futuristic, so cool. So could you tell us a little bit about what your role at KPMG is all about, and even take us back to how you even applied for it, what that process was like? Because I'm really curious to go into what does that role entail, and how did you go about securing it?
My husband, Peter Zing, referred me to the role. Coincidentally, he's also my co-founder at Transhuman Coin. So we already work together. Oh. And now we just see each other all the time. So we both actually interviewed for the role. And so he was very supportive when I got it. And even now, sometimes we do work on some initiatives, because we're both sort of in the metaverse area together at the firm. So he looks after more of the immediate opportunities around consulting for metaverse initiatives. And then I'm looking at building a venture. So what we do in the KPMG Futures team, which is the business division I sit in, is we build ventures. So we've already got a few successful ventures. So they're product-based businesses, and it's very different to what we traditionally offer to our clients because most of our revenue comes from audit and advisory work, and we traditionally have not built these product-based businesses. So this is what we're trying to do more of. And in my case, I have been going through the phase or the stages that a startup would. So right from the first phase of, you know, ideation, testing ideas and hypotheses, and then next, which I'm not yet on, which is moving on to stage two, building of POCs. And then thirdly, the phase of, you know, building MVP where you can really scale out. So the phase that I'm in, what I've been looking at so far is a couple of broad themes that I can talk about. So they range from security, identity, real world asset tokenization, also themes around accounting and crypto payroll, are things I've been working at. But broadly, anything that's around metaverse. So when I talk about metaverse, my definition I'm using right now is the 3D internet, which is powered by AI. I think AI will always have some element in it. Or you could think of it as 3D virtual worlds, which access via the internet and could be blockchain-based or not. I'm interested in the blockchain-based metaverse. When we think about what is required for the metaverse, I look at it in terms of a few layers. So if we look at the metaverse stack, there is the infrastructure layer, and that's where you have your networks like Ethereum and, you know, Hedera coming in at that layer. And then the next one is the tools. So OpenZeppelin, Snapshot, all those tools that developers use to build real applications and use cases on top of. So which brings us to the next layer, which is the third layer. That third layer is all the dApps that we use, all the use cases. So all the DAOs sit there. Also all the decentralized exchanges like Uniswap, SushiSwap, and even some of the games. So Alluvium and I've got a mind blank, but you know, there's many great games out there. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, You've got that access layer. So that's where the UI comes in. How do you access the metaverse? And that could be via three different ways. So you've got your browsers, so mobile or desktop. Then you've got your VR, AR headsets. So it doesn't necessarily, people like to, well, sometimes think of metaverse and they think of VR, AR immediately. This is just a way in which you can access the metaverse. And then lastly is the Web3 native way of accessing the metaverse, which is via crypto wallets. So you bypass the browser, like completely. I don't know when we're going to get there. We always talk about we're going to access everything the Web3 native way. It hasn't really happened so far. And I think that's a really big opportunity. So this brings me to the other topic or area I'm interested in, which is the digital asset wallets. So those who own the wallets will own the gateway to the metaverse. And I think this is a very critical area that if anyone wants to build competitive advantage in, should be looking at.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And if I could just like sort of, because you've recently went through a bit of an interviewing process, you've went through an onboarding process as well. Like we've actually got a couple of women that have recently reached out to us, and they are either thinking about coming back into the workplace after having a little bit of time out to raise their family, or women that are about to make a bit of a career pivot into technology. And they're really curious about how they can set themselves up for success in an interview process. Could you sort of talk to either like your experience on recently sort of interviewing and getting onboarded, or if you've recently been in a position of hiring and hiring resources, like what would your advice be to women that are going to be embarking on an interviewing process for careers in technology? Like how can they best prepare? How can they set themselves up for success in an interview?
Most of the interviews I've been in have very much been based on the STAR method. So, you know, using that STAR framework, and a lot of it is behavioral based interview questions. apart from that, so I forgot to mention I'm also a software engineer. So I worked as a software engineer for about 4 years and building blockchain-based applications, but also just normal Web2 applications. So when you're going for a technical role, such as a developer, you will have to do some coding exercises, and they will probably be in the form of some whiteboarding exercise where it's a sort of like a trivia question that you have to answer. So they'll ask you, how do you efficiently sort everything from A to Z, you know, alphabetically? Can you write me the algorithm to do so? And then so you'll be writing on this whiteboard, or in this case, just, you know, on your screen. And you have to be able to talk through how you actually, you know, how you came up with a solution and why you're proposing this and how efficient you think it is. So there is some sort of way to assess how effective or efficient your algorithm is going to be. There's a good way and a terrible way to write things, but they will work in the end. When it comes to being Web3 or doing Web3 interviews, it's important to demonstrate that you understand Web3. And usually anyone who comes to me asking how to get into this space, which I believe you're both more the experts on, though what I try to impart to them is try and get as hands-on with Web3 as you can by doing, say, these five things. So first, you know, buy some crypto. So you're probably going to need a crypto wallet. So number one, you know, sign up for MetaMask. And two, go on to some exchange, centralized or decentralized exchange, you know, to buy some. Usually you're going to have to start with centralized, my bad. So you can buy some crypto. And then you might want to go on to, you know, a decentralized exchange to understand what DeFi is. So it is a core, you know, the core product in DeFi to understand what a DEX or decentralized exchange is, and understanding what a liquidity pool is and how you can become a liquidity provider. So that's the next step. So that's already covered crypto, DeFi, and then the next thing you want to cover, which is the fourth thing, probably NFTs. So why not go onto some marketplace and, you know, go buy an NFT with the newly acquired crypto you've got. And then the next thing is you may want to mint an NFT once you've bought it yourself and try and sell one. And the fifth one is probably DAOs. So now you may want to join the DAO. So maybe the DAO of the decentralized, which is the decentralized exchange that you have just, you know, participated in. So if I could just sum it up, get involved in crypto, DeFi, NFTs, and DAOs. And I think you're pretty set. You can read about it, but you will never be able to fully understand it until you participate.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there, Elise, because it wasn't until I got my hands dirty and, you know, minted my first NFT, you know, bought some Ethereum, opened a wallet, you know, all of that, that I started to go, this isn't actually as scary as what I thought it was going to be, or as technical as what I thought it was going to be. And I'm, even though I recruit in tech, I am far from somebody who could even write a line of code. So I thought, if I can do it, anyone can do it, because my approach to technology is just turn it on and off again. That will do the job. So I think, like, it's not as intimidating as what I think a lot of people make out. I think it's the acronyms that we use and things like that then also can be used as a bit of a barrier. But I want to go back to what you were saying before, because I think, like, this is just, I know there's a lot of businesses that Pam and I are working with right now. And we were even in the 7-Eleven office the other week. And one of the questions came up of, like, should we have a metaverse strategy? And I think, like, I always try and think to myself, you know, who is listening to this? I think there's going to be a lot of, like, you know, of our clients listening to this. And do you think Web2 companies, like bigger brands, should be looking into Web3 technology? And if they are, where would be a sort of good place to start for businesses wanting to explore this new technology and this new world?
Congratulations on the 7-Eleven partnership, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
They're doing some amazing things, and we didn't want to partner with anyone, but what they're trying to achieve is incredible. So yeah, it was a great honor to partner with them, for sure.
Absolutely. So yes, I do think it is important to have a metaverse strategy. The pattern I've seen with companies is they want to enter the metaverse due to two main reasons. Firstly, It is about engaging customers in a new way. And secondly, they're looking for new revenue streams. So the customer engagement piece is probably what 7-Eleven is looking at doing. And we've actually got a really good example, if I'm allowed to speak about it, Starbucks. So
yes,
Starbucks, you know, they're not, I wouldn't even say they're web two, really. They're brick and mortar company. They don't actually sell anything online. But they found a new way in which they can engage their existing customer base and bring them online, as well as potentially build a new revenue stream through the selling of digital items or creating these digital items that have a monetary value that will be traded in the marketplace. So boom, you have a new revenue stream. So with Starbucks, it's a really important example, I think, because they're a really old brand. They haven't been doing too much that is particularly digital, I believe, in the last couple of years, but they've gone all in. They've spent a couple of million dollars on this initiative, and they've been able to bring the mainstream in. And like you said, they're not using jargon. They're using terms that people are familiar with, digital collectibles, digital items, or, you know, loyalty reward items, things that, you know, language that you and I speak. So it makes it less scary. When it comes to the overall strategy, I can see already that you've got all these large luxury labels and fashion labels who are already thinking about the overall strategy. They're not just saying, we're going to release an NFT collection. They're thinking about what do they release one by one that makes sense, that will bring their mainstream audience on board. So at the very start, it's getting the people at the fringes interested. So LV, they have Louis the Game, I believe. And, you know, it's a fun, cartoony game. Not many people, not maybe not all their customer base will be interested in playing the game. Perhaps their younger generation. I'm just going to make this presumption. So first they released the game, and it was only after they collaborated with Beeple to release an NFT collection. That is, you know, their in-game items that you could collect. And this is a really clever way in which it was well thought out. They didn't just go out and say, we're going to release an NFT collection because everybody else is doing it. And I believe that is part of a broader, you know, strategy. Nike is a very good example as well. They've got not just, firstly, they acquired Artifact, and then now they've launched Dot Swoosh, which is their entry to the metaverse, they say, which firstly, was their initiative was to allow people to design their own sneakers. So I think we have a lot of examples to draw upon from these large corporates and how much they've invested their time and money into.
I think it's really exciting. And I think that one thing that really excites me is that these bigger brands that women also know of, you know, Nike, Louis Vuitton, Gucci, they're all entering the Web3 space, which is also going to encourage more women to be curious about technology, which is always something that, again, I always come back to is like, you know, it's not just for boys. It's like, oh, look at all of these well-known brands also doing really cool things. And that Starbucks example is just such a prime example I use over and over again. It's like, that's how we're going to onboard more people with that even realize that they're really interacting with the technology. And I think that's when it will start really hitting the mainstream, which will be really exciting. But curious, obviously, to sort of hear your thoughts and like what are you excited about, you know, about the sort of the future of like where this could go? And we touched upon at the start of like all of the incredible, you know, ways that we can really help people. But where do you think we're going to be? And obviously, this is just your prediction and your opinion. But let's say 10 years from now, are we going to be doing this podcast with, you know, our VR headset in? Are we going to be, you know, in the metaverse recording? Like, how quickly do you think we're going to get there? Are we going to get there? What's your sort of predictions of how we're going to evolve this technology?
The singularity will happen in 2045. So we've got about 21, 22 years. So if you believe in the technological singularity, that's when machine capability will surpass human capability. So, you know, this means a lot of different things. If we refer to the movie Her, which is basically what Bing is building. I don't know if you remember this movie. So Her is a very intelligent operating system, and eventually it gets so intelligent that it decides that it's just going to, you know, leave all the humans and they're going to explore the multiverse. So this is a possibility that, you know, that we could get to the stage where we have artificial general intelligence that, like we've seen in the movie Her. Where are we heading if we reverse engineer and look back? So if we say, what will the world look like in 10 years' time? So we've got lots of developments happening in brain-computer interfaces. This is important for the metaverse because it will allow us to upload our minds into the cloud. So we could be living in these data centers instead. It will also allow us to upgrade our intelligence. So if we imagine the movie The Matrix, where we could just download a module, you know, you download the Kung Fu module and he's like, yeah, I know Kung Fu now.
That would be very cool, by the way.
Exactly. I can't even retain the information that I've learned over the last 10 years.
Could you argue then as well, sorry to cut in, but again, this is just where my thought went then. It's like, could you argue that's because also of technology, because we're so distracted and because we live in such a fast-paced world? Like, it, on the other end, is that because we're living in a world where we've got so much stimulation that we're not able to sit and learn and read and retain that information? Like, are we going too far the other way? Are we sort of like giving up our own human power by saying, oh, I can't learn this, so wouldn't it be great just to put a chip in my brain and then I can just upload things quicker? Are we giving away our power to technology by doing this? That's always what I'm sort of thinking about as well in my own mind. Just curious what your thoughts are on that as well.
We perhaps naturally can't retain all the information that we hear about, that we read about. We've probably got a biological limitation. I don't have the stats to back that up. And we are always trying to hack it. We've got these productivity hacks, which try to make us, you know, focus better. But we still don't reach the ceiling of what we're capable of, I believe. And this is where we need to use technology to do that. So for information retention, this is why we write down notes.
Yeah.
So we've already outsourced that to, you know, other technology, whether that was, you know, actual smartphone or paper and pen. So why not? If we have this technology available to us, then we should use it so that we can achieve our capabilities. And if we bring it back to where we think the world is heading, so mind uploading is a possibility, then you've got, so this points to, you know, achieving super intelligence, but also achieving, you know, super longevity. You've also got gene editing. There was a really good study by David Sinclair, and David Sinclair did this study where he was able to extend the you know, the healthy life of mice, you know, in a clinical setting, in a, you know, lab setting. And I think they're going to start going into clinical trials with humans. And it's looking at the expression of genes, so the epigenetics, rather than, you know, the actual, like our genes, but also, you know, the layer on top where it's affected by our environment. And so there is a lot of realistic progress in technologies which will enable us to achieve that, longer life for humans, living longer and healthier. And potentially we could extend that to beyond the 120 lifespan that we currently know of, I think, bit by bit. So they call this the, if you live longer, then you increase the possibility of being able to, you know, extend your life each year that you live longer. So this is sort of, I'm not actually explaining it correctly, but it is related to the theory of longevity escape velocity. So I think we're going to, if we look at the overall picture, what the future looks like, we're going to have healthier humans, which live longer. We're also going to have more ubiquitous use of artificial general intelligence. I'm not sure if it's general intelligence, but definitely more advanced machine intelligence. And it will change what our jobs look like. So I don't know what that will look like, whether we're still actually, you know, doing the roles that we're in, whether it's recruitment, whether I'm actually looking at how we can build metaverse ventures. But it may, if we are able to do good things and shape it to how we, what we want it to do, then maybe it'll look good for us. So this is where I'm really excited about what we're working on at Transhuman Coin. So this is part of the transhumanism community that I help build. So Transhuman Coin, what we are doing is we are using the funds we're building to support these different projects that are working on this. So whether it's healthy life extension, brain computer interfaces, the Tesla wheelchairs, all those things will help us humans live better, but also perhaps create the jobs of the future. So we may be working in things like gene editing and sequencing, BCI, and all those emerging industries, which mm-hmm. will become a larger part of our economy.
Mm. I think that's just such a beautiful way to almost come to the end of the podcast with like all of that excitement that you're talking about, because if we get the right people like yourself mm-hmm. driving this, mm-hmm. the future is so exciting mm-hmm. and we can have a real positive impact. And for those women listening to this, this is why we need you, because women typically do want to have an impact, and we care about things like health, like longevity, and, you know, and that sort of more nurturing nature that I think technology is really missing right now. So Elise, mm-hmm. like, thank you for all that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's really exciting to hear from you all of the incredible work that you're working on. And it's left me feeling excited about the future, not scared about the future. Mm-hmm. And remember, like, we are all in control of our own destiny. So if you are listening to this right now and you're thinking, right, it's time for me to upskill, take action. Don't wait, because you do not want to be one of those people in 10 years time that you haven't upskilled and you are left behind. So please take action for every single one of you who's listening to this now. You know, go away, look, research, you know, open a wallet, do whatever you need to do just to kind of really sort of start immerse yourself in this new technology, in this new world, because you will really benefit from it. But Elise, where can we send people who want to find out more about yourself and what you're working on right now?
You can find me on LinkedIn, or I'm on Twitter under my name, Elise Su.
Amazing. We'll put all the links in the show notes. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.